We begin today's programme with Rhiannon Giddens, who has been a guest on the show a few times now. She put out a new album in 2017 called Freedom Highway. It was recorded before the current president of the United States was elected, but it came out afterwards and suddenly took on a whole new significance in its exploration of Black American history. She came in with her producer and fellow musician Dirk Powell for a preview of the album, and the first song that she sang was called At the Purchaser's Option.
Got a baby, shall I keep him? 'Twill come the day when I'll be weeping. But how can I love him any less? This little babe upon my breast. You can take my body, you can take my bones, you can take my blood, but not my soul. You can take my body, you can take my bones, take my blood, but not my soul. Got a body dark and strong. I was young, but not for long. You took me to bed a little girl, left me in a woman's world. You can take my body, you can take my bones, you can take my blood, but not my soul. You can take my body, take my bones, you can take my blood, but not my soul.
Thank you very much indeed. That was Rhiannon Giddens on today's music show, along with Dirk Powell. And that was a song called The Purchaser's Option, which is the opening track from Freedom Highway. And you probably better explain the title. The album was going to be called At the Purchaser's Option originally, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It felt like a
the right thing, the right statement, you know. And then the election happened. I don't know if you were aware, but
that was reported here too.
It was like the day after the election that the team of us kind of just went, actually, Freedom Highway is such a statement of future and positivity and most importantly, standing together and not letting each other down, that it just seemed like that needed to be the focus track, that needed to be the title, and it has felt right ever since.
We'll come back to Freedom Highway and we'll talk about pop staples, but tell us about this song, because there's a horrifying advertisement in the booklet which explains where this song comes from.
Yeah, I found that through the power of technology on Google. I do this, I kind of was looking up images, you know, because I read a lot about slavery times, and I found this ad, and it would have been put in the paper. And this was very common. See, what people don't realize is that slavery wasn't relegated to just a big plantation, Gone with the Wind kind of thing. Everybody, until it was outlawed in some places, had slaves. And they were a form of cash. If you needed some cash, you could sell a person. And that's what people did. So this woman, young woman, was obviously being sold for no issues. Whoever was selling her needed some money. And it states that in the ad, it's just for want of employ. And then at the end, which is the kicker, the end says that she has with her a 9-month-old baby who is at the purchaser's option. And just the horror, the everyday banal horror of that, just that she has no agency over any part of her life, not even her own child, and just how families were destroyed at just by a whim of somebody's, I only want that one, I don't want both. It's just that whole idea just kind of became the song, just demanded to be heard.
And we don't know what happened. That's the other.
No,
the other.
I have no idea.
Thing about that advertisement, it's just there, and you know that the purchaser may or may not have taken the child.
Yeah,
it's a tremendously powerful, almost like a motif for the whole album, isn't it? Because this is music which it goes across all sorts of traditions, musical traditions and political traditions as well. And you've done this, you did this with the previous album, in a sense, taking women's songs from Nina Simone and Sister Rosetta Tharpe and Dolly Parton and Geechee Wiley. Mm-hmm. But this time it's more like, well, I guess different aspects of African-American experience, mm-hmm. from slavery to right now.
Yes, definitely. That was sort of the idea. We weren't sure exactly how it was, you know, what the end result was going to be, but that was sort of the impetus, like one of the impetuses, I don't know, going into making the record.
If what was the starting point then, if you didn't know what the end point was going to be, where did it begin?
Well, for me, it began some years ago with a song called Julie. It was the very first slave narrative song that I'd written, and I ended up writing a little handful of these songs and had been sort of sitting on them and not knowing what to do with them really until I knew the next record after Tomorrow's My Turn, I wanted to involve these songs somehow, and then the idea about the African-American experience. And I wasn't sure how it was going to happen until I met Dirk, and I was like, oh, you know, it was like I had been holding on to them, not wanting to sort of not feeling right about anybody that I sort of could have worked with them until he and I started working together. And it was just like, the stuff that we were talking about anyway, race and history and you know, the traditions that he comes from, it just seemed like a really natural fit.
Yes. Dirk, are you aware what you actually brought to the project at that point?
Oh, I would hope that it was a sense of understanding and family and a feeling of a willingness to go as far into the emotionality of things as the material warrants, which is as far as it goes, really.
Yeah.
But the last record, you know, Rhiannon, as you mentioned, it featured her vocal in an amazing way, and it featured these beautiful songs by women writers, and it emphasized a part of her that's very important and wonderful. But I feel like this record she was ready to say, but here's all of who I am. Here are the things that really matter to me the most, and including doing the record in our studio in Louisiana.
Yes, I've seen the photographs. I'm amazed you ever left. It looks... tell us about the studio.
Yes, well, the studio is right on Bayou Teche near Brobridge, Louisiana, where I live. The building was built probably around 1850, something like that. They can tell from the saw markings on the wood that it was pre-circular saws and that the wood around there made of cypress. would have been what they made it with, and they can date it back to that era. It's got a special feel, that cabin. It was probably an old cabin of some kind, and don't know exactly who lived there. But it feels like there are some stories in the walls that want to come out. And I think when we first recorded in there, we felt that energy in there.
Yeah, I'm sure. And it's in a way, it's like a counterpart to the songs, because one of the things that I find very striking about this album is that the songs come from all over the place. And sometimes when they seem like they're folk songs, for instance, like Julie, the one you mentioned, is actually your song. Mm-hmm. And so you haven't just claimed other people's material and made it your own, which you have certainly done. You've also gone in the opposite direction. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of give and take.
Definitely. I mean, this was, you know, the previous record was a very particular thing, and this one, in a lot of ways, is going in a totally different direction. You know, it being mostly original material, and as Dirk mentioned, the whole idea of family, and you know, everybody on there was, you know, from the touring, the band that I tour with, from family members, both of our family members, from friends, from people who just, it seemed to click right. And that kind of instinctual sort of warmth and openness, like, was really a hallmark of how the recording, you know, went, going in with sort of some plan, but also going in with just knowing all of these beautiful energies are going to come together in this beautiful space, and, you know, we're going to, you know, reap the benefits, I guess, you know, just see what happens.
And it's very specific as well, and the songs are very specific. I mean, you say family, but it the stories are kind of often small stories, aren't they? Thinking, for instance, of Richard Farina's song, mm-hmm. Birmingham Sunday, where it's by the naming of names,
yes.
that suddenly the horror of the story, it comes home.
Well, that's it. It's names and faces and individual experiences, and that's definitely something that I feel like gets lost in the contemplation of the slavery era, of civil rights, is, you know, there's just like, slavery, wasn't that terrible? Yes, it was, but we don't get an idea of it until we are aware of the 1,000,000,000 little deaths that these people had to deal with every day, you know, and these stories is what happens. And for me, like, the woman, the black woman has just always, in a lot of the stories that have gotten out there, she's not the agent, she's the one who's inspiring somebody else to change or something, whereas she in history has just been such an incredibly important bulwark or just rock, and having to hold everybody together. And I just felt like there wasn't enough of her story out there either.
You're listening to The Music Show on RN, and I'm talking to Rhiannon Giddens about her new album, which is called Freedom Highway. Let's talk briefly about Pops, because this is such a wonderful song. And again, it's very much, it's specific in a different sort of way, because it's so much of its time.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's what I love about how that song came to be on the record is the story for me, which is I didn't learn it from the Staples recording. I learned it from a friend of mine by name of B. Beeman, whose parents are from Sri Lanka, but he grew up in St. Louis. So he's a completely all-American person, but you know, it all of that's in there too, which I really love that idea of him being so versed in the Staples Singer stuff, you know, and bringing this to some shows that we did, and you know, wanting to bring that in as well. It's like, whose is the American experience? Like, who gets to say who, you know, what's the American voice? And I love that, bringing that, an aspect of that in as well, you know, with recording.
And he sings.
Yeah.
And he sounds like Pops.
Yeah.
So he's adopted that. Yeah. The other voice that jumps out from this album is Justin Harrington. He's your nephew, is that
right? That's my nephew, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Better Get It Right First Time.
Well, that song's really interesting. It was the first song that Dirk and I wrote expressly kind of for this project. And it came from a lot of different things. You know, I just witnessed this concert, this Carnegie concert at Sing Sing Prison, which is very effective to me. You know, we'd been talking about Angels Laid Him Away. We'd been talking about police brutality. I'd been seeing my sister weep for the idea that her 18-year-old son wearing a hoodie could be in trouble just going to the corner store. And I also talked a lot to Justin because he's feeling a lot of anger about all of this stuff. And so when we started writing this song, you know, the idea of the two voices being the mother and the son, you know, it's like I thought that was really important. And I just, we wrote it and we just left a space. And I told him about where the song came from. And I just said, you write, because he's a rapper. I was like, you write your experience. We've been talking about this. And I'm quite proud of how that one turned out.
Yes. And it's a very powerful moment, dramatically, emotionally, that transition into his voice as well. He sort of takes over the song.
Yeah.
It's like it moves on a generation.
Yeah.
So from slavery to Black Lives Matter, I mean, it's really the journey of this album, isn't it? And now in this brave new America that you're living in some of the time, at least, the album seems incredibly sort of the moment, as though it was a response to what is now happening.
I just find that so intriguing because, you know, we've been working on this record for a while, and it would be the same record, just be called something different if Hillary had won, for example. These issues have been around since the country's been around. And that was kind of the whole point, was you can't know why things are happening now until you look at why they happened then. And so it just became, like, I just witnessing, like, what people are writing about it, just given what changed in the American cultural landscape, just really fascinates me, because to me, it's always prescient. These themes are always of the moment, because just nowadays there's not a cover, sort of a cover on them. And so they're a little bit more out to the general populace, I think.
The other song you're going to do for us from the album, We Could Fly, is in a way is appropriate given what we've been talking about, because it's an intergenerational song, isn't it? Can you tell us about this? You wrote it together.
Yeah. It's like towards the end of the process, and Dirk said that we need one more song, a different kind of energy. You know, I remember we were just sort of searching for the song, and I'd been thinking about this African-American folktale about the people who could fly. There's a book I grew up with by Virginia Hamilton where she retold a lot of these sort of African-American tales, and that was one of them. And it always stuck with me, in the idea of these people who in Africa, they could fly, but then when they were captured and put on ships and carried across the ocean, they lost their wings and they forgot how to fly. And during the time of bondage, you know, one of the old wise men remembers the magic words, and the people who had that in their blood, who were descended from the people who could fly, rise up out of the cotton fields and they fly away. And the people who weren't, who didn't have that in their blood, they're like, take us with you. And they, of course, they can't, because they can just take themselves. But they said, tell the story. So they tell the story to their kids and, you know, to their children. And it's just this beautiful allegory, you know. And so that kind of became the jumping off point for this song.
Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the show. It's very nice to see you again, Rhiannon Giddens. Thank you very much, Dirk Powell. And
absolutely. Thank you.
We should hear this song.
Mama, dear mama, look in yonder tree. See that pretty little sparrow looking back at me. She can soar above the clouds, way up in the sky. She can fly away from here. Why, oh, why can't I? Daughter, dear daughter, I'll tell you something true. Remember Granny Liza, well, every night she flew. They tried to keep her down, but there was nothing they could do. She could fly, she could fly. She could slip the bonds of earth and rise so high. She could fly across the river, the spirit in her hand, searching, always searching for the promised land. Mama, dear mama, mama, tell me more. I feel a
trembling in my arms I never felt before. Daughter, dear daughter, listen what I say. Your granny always told me you'd feel that way someday. That every time she looked at you, she saw the old time ways when we could fly. We could slip the bonds of earth and rise so high. We could fly across the mountain together, hand in hand, searching, always searching for the promised land. In my feet, a longing to be free. My heart, it is a shaking with an old, old song. I hear the voices saying it's time for moving on. She took her mama by the hand, they rose up in the air. They held each other tight and then they flew away from there. They held each other tight and then they flew away from there. They could fly, they could fly. They could slip the bonds of earth and rise so. They could fly across the ocean together, hand in hand, searching, always searching for the promised land.
That's We Could Fly, a song composed by Rhiannon Giddens and Dirk Powell and performed on today's music show by them. You can find it on the album called Freedom Highway. You're listening to The Music Show on RN.